The U.S. is not engaged in armed conflict with Iran, but we are at war by other means. That's what one unidentified source told Laura Rosen, a freelance reporter who writes for the American Prospect, the National Journal, and other publications as well. Laura Rosen, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Very strong language coming from that source. What backs it up, according to that source, other sources, and facts on the ground?
Yes, what sources are telling me in and around the government is that, you know, not just the Bush administration policy has changed and is being more strongly articulated in the past 6 weeks, but that the perception of the problem that Iran poses to U.S. interests has changed in the past 6 months. Chiefly, that was changed by Lebanon. A lot of Sunni allies, including Saudi Arabia, were really spooked by the prospect of Iranian-backed Hezbollah, you know, taking down a government and continuing to threaten to take down the Lebanese government, and also by the sheer popularity of Iranian President Ahmadinejad and Hezbollah leader Nasrallah among their streets. And so, you know, gradually over the past 6 months, you've seen more vocal Sunni ally support for a U.S. policy of countering Iran using all sorts of means, including proxies, short of war.
So it's not just then the United States concerned about this, it's our Sunni allies. What about Israel?
And Israel. But what it's broadened from is, you know, for the past 2 years, we've heard about Iran's nuclear program as being the chief, you know, concern of the United States and its European allies. And now really it's this prospect, and we're hearing a lot about it, that Iran is a destabilizing actor in the region, giving support, material support, allegedly to various groups inside Iraq, to Hezbollah in Lebanon, to Hamas in the Palestinian territories, and also, you know, giving some sort of solidarity support to Shiite minority groups in the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia.
It's interesting that in his interview with National Public Radio yesterday, the president made a distinction between the kinds of challenges to American interests that you're talking about and the nuclear program. And he said very specifically, the nuclear program we can resolve by diplomatic means. What did he intend by that, do you think?
Well, I was talking to someone in the government today, and it's, you know, I'm like, what is the metric? What would Iran have to do at this point for the U.S. to kind of ratchet down the trajectory we're on? And they said it's really not clear, even to them, but still it's the nuclear, it's the suspending uranium enrichment is the symbolic act that Iran would have to agree to, you know. But yet, you know, what I hear from others is that the U.S. wants Iran to step back from all sorts of destabilizing activity. And I know that there's currently a tussle in the interagency process over what the U.S. is going to present very soon about evidence of Iranian supply and support to militants in Iraq.
Now, that was supposed to begin today when John Negroponte, formerly the intelligence director, began his confirmation process to be the deputy secretary of defense. Are you aware of anything that he might have said today that would increase the evidence that we know about so far of Iran's involvement, particularly in Iraq?
No, what I was told today is that current U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Khalilzad, is basically ready to go with presenting this evidence, and that essentially it's not been cleared through the principals at the interagency level, you know, Secretary Rice and Secretary Gates and all of those. And one problem, of course, is this is all happening with the, you know, coinciding with the Libby trial, and there's a lot of anxiety on the part of the administration that, you know, they know they're going to have a lot of critical looks at what they're presenting. And they're quite confident that Iran is doing lots of bad things in Iraq and other places as well. But they know there's going to be incredible scrutiny of what precisely they present. So that's one of the tensions.
All right. So more and more evidence may be forthcoming. We'll have to watch for that. Meantime, we'll talk about what we know already. Laura Rosen, once again, is a senior correspondent for the American Prospect, writes for the National Journal and other publications as well on foreign policy and national security. Trita Parsi is president of the National Iranian American Council. He's author of a forthcoming book, Treacherous Triangle, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States. Trita Parsi, welcome back to our program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Iran and Iraq fought a very bloody war that went on for a very long time during the regime of Saddam Hussein. What are the relations between those two countries now?
From the Iranian perspective, they have probably found the best possible option. They have now an Iraq in which Shiites are in a majority, and they are, through the democracy that has been put in place, however flawed, been able to get to the helms of power. And the Shiites that are at the helms of power in Iraq have, most of them, spent considerable amount of time inside of Iran during the Iran-Iraq war, but also during the decade in which they were exiled and conducting activities against Saddam Hussein from abroad. So Iran has tremendously strong relations with the Iraqi government, perhaps a little bit too strong, because the strength of their relationships with the Iraqi government is causing concern, not only in the United States, but also in Sunni states such as Saudi Arabia, that are concerned that Iran's influence is going to become a little bit too much.
So you then agree with what we heard from Laura Rosen, that Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt are, in fact, very concerned about Iran at this point.
They're very concerned about Iran, but what is interesting is that the Iraqis are very concerned about Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt. They're very concerned about the fact that these states, particularly the Arab states of the Persian Gulf, have contributed very little, if anything, to stabilization in Iraq. They have not invested in Iraq. They have not helped the Iraqi government with development. They have not been able to give them any loans. At one time, I remember, I saw an exchange between an Iraqi government official, very high level, in which he was absolutely furious at the Persian Gulf Arab states. And he accused them of having given $34 billion to Saddam Hussein when Saddam was conducting a war against Iran. But they're giving them, the Iraqis, nothing now when there is a democracy in Iraq.
Trita Parsi, again, the president of the National Iranian American Council. We'll come back to both him and Laura Rosen in a moment. First, I want to introduce Joshua Muravchik, who is resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Most recent book is The Future of the United Nations. Welcome to our program.
Thanks very much, Warren. I'm glad to be with you.
What do you think about the degree of evidence that the administration has brought forward so far? How do you respond to the points of Trita Parsi that if this had been going on for 2 or 3 years, we might have heard about it before and something might have been done about it?
Well, it depends what the this is. I think there's no question that Iran has been meddling in Iraq in a very destructive way. There is some argument about, you know, just exactly how much this is, or how far they've gone, what kinds of weapons or explosives they may have moved into Iraq or given to terrorist groups. Look, we have this simple fact that stares us in the face, which is that the single most violent, destructive factor in Iraq at this point has become the militia of Muqtada Sadr, and that's deeply involved with the Iranians.
The Bush administration has promised evidence of Iran's meddling in Iraq by arming and training insurgents to destabilize the new government. But both Iranian and Iraqi officials say they have business together. Phoebe Marr is author of The Modern History of Iraq. She describes how complex the relationship between those countries really is.
We have to be very careful which Iraqis we're talking about, because, in fact, Iraqi society is rather fractured. And one thing we have to enter into this discussion is some definition of which groups, what meddling means, and so on. After the elections of 2005, it did return a number of parties, which were religio-political parties, Shia parties, some of whom have long-standing connections with Iran. Mukhtar Sadr does not have long-standing connections with Iran, although he's probably getting unquestionably getting some help. But Skiti, led by the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, led by Hakim, was formed in Iran, sponsored by Iran. The Better Brigade was trained in Iran, and it is part of the government today. Even Maliki's Da'wa party has longstanding ties with Iran. So these parties, while they are Iraqi, and it's not clear that ultimately they're not going to distance themselves in some measure from Iran, they owe a great deal to Iran. The Kurdish parties in power also were refugees in Iran and have relations with Iran. But this feeling toward Iran is not shared by Sunnis and a number of other Iraqis, and in fact, it's a very divisive factor in Iraq, because fear of the Iranians and their Shia ties is certainly one of the things that seems to be driving the sectarian strife in Iraq today.
What about economic relations between the two countries? The Iranian ambassador to Iraq in the New York Times a couple of days ago said that economic as well as military ties, wasn't very specific about the military ties, but the economic ties particularly were going to be expanded. What would that mean?
Well, it's not even a question of expanding them. They're there. This is one of the difficulties for the American position. Iran is a neighbor. It's going to be there. It's a very big neighbor. Iraq is at least nominally an independent state, and it's presumed that it's going to have relations with Iran. And Iran has had a diplomatic representation in Iraq for some time. It is engaged in a lot of economic activity. It is helping in a way that other countries are not, as was mentioned. A lot of pilgrims, Shia pilgrims, come to Najaf. They'll be coming this week, providing tourist income. And there are many other ways in which Iran is in there in a way that makes it very difficult for the United States to stop. So we have to define what the meddling is. That would certainly include weapons of some kind coming across the border, whether intentionally or smuggled across or whatever, that are used against not only the Americans, but other Iraqis that are helping to create this sectarian strife, and the kind of support that is given to various and sundry militias who are in death squads, in short, who are engaged in creating turbulence and destabilizing the Iraqi government. So we have to be very clear in getting the Iraqi government itself to distance itself from Iran with respect to those issues which are destabilizing, but it's very difficult to see how we can stop normal commercial and other relations with Iran, which is something common in international relations.
If Iran wants to have normal trade relations and other economic relations with Iran, why then is it supportive of death squads and other destabilizing influences?
Well, because it's got a number of agendas, and one of them, of course, is to keep the United States off guard. The fear that the United States is going to strike them in the future with respect to nuclear weapons, take other actions, and so on is very much on their mind. And it's no secret, of course, that we have an adversarial relationship with the current Iranian government. And so one can see that it would be in their interest to keep the United States involved in Iraq in a way that is deleterious to U.S. interests, but distracts them from Iran. And incidentally, it may be that this current focus on Iran is also intended, at least in part by the United States, to distract people from Iraq, because there is, of course, a great deal of concern in the rest of the Middle East, particularly among so-called Sunni states, of the growth of Iranian influence in the region.
You say so-called Sunni states. Are we too simplistic in the way we look at the Middle East?
Yeah, that's right. And I think we use the shorthand in these programs all the time, the Sunni and the Shia, but it's much more complex. You have to know which parties, which groups. And I still think that many of the regimes we're talking about, Saudi Arabia, for example, I think has been fairly careful about this, and Jordan as well, to make a distinction between Shia, even Shia in Iraq, and Iran and Iranian state influence.
And, of course, the Iranians are not Arabs, which is another distinguishing and complicating factor.
Yes, a very big and a very important point. The overwhelming majority of the Shia in Iraq are Arab, and of course the Kurds in the north speak Kurdish, although many Iraqis, as was mentioned before, in some of these political parties like Skidi and Da'wa have spent years, even decades in Iran, and their kids may speak Persian, maybe even as a first, if not a second, language. So there's a lot more Persian spoken in Iraq today than there was, say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Phoebe Maher, again, Iraq scholar, author of The Modern History of Iraq. Back to Trita Parsi, again, the president of the National Iranian American Council. How would you react to Phoebe Maher's description of Iranian motivations, complex as she described them in this situation?
I would agree with a lot what Phoebe said there. I think the Iranians do have several competing agendas and several competing concerns. On the one hand, I think the majority of the people in the government want to see an Iraq that is stable and that is friendly towards Iran. That's critical for them. They did not want to see the United States install an anti-Iranian Iraqi government, which would then repeat what was taking place in the 1980s between Iran and Iraq, in which the enmity between the two countries spilled over into a very, very bloody war. On the other hand, they're very concerned that if the United States manages to get out of the situation in Iraq quickly enough, then the Bush administration will once again go on the war path against Iran.
But let me stop you right there. Do you think that the United States does ultimately have militaristic intentions with regard to Iran?
I think it's extremely difficult to be able to say, based on the past activity and pattern of activity of the Bush administration, to say that they don't have that. We're seeing more ships being sent to the Persian Gulf right now. We're seeing the president saying that they will take firm action against Iran. We're seeing how they're putting Patriot missiles in the Gulf countries right now, which is completely useless if you want to get stability in Iraq, but it is extremely useful if you're planning to go to war with Iran. So there's a lot of ominous signs. And mindful of the pattern of behavior of this last 6 years, I think it's difficult to give the Bush administration the benefit of the doubt.
Joshua Muravchik with the American Enterprise Institute, do you think that the United States has militaristic intentions?
It's Iran that has militaristic intentions, but I do think it's possible that the United States will use military force to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear weapons state. The intentions here, the question so much isn't militaristic. The question is that Iran is on a campaign to try to become the predominant or hegemonic power in the Middle East. It has sort of two prongs to that effort. One prong is by being the trying to be the leader of the Shia in the various countries where there are majority or large minority Shia populations, and on the other hand, by being the patron for the militants and radicals who are against any kind of peace with Israel or with the United States, and by playing this these two cards, Iran hopes to fulfill its goal to become dominant mm-hmm. in the region and possibly beyond. I mean, the founder of the Islamic Republic in Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini, made a point of saying Iran is just the beginning. And we've in recent times heard President Ahmadinejad say talk again and again about the global Islamic revolution, which he believes that Iran is the spearhead of.
Phoebe Maher, back to you. We're almost out of time, and I apologize, Mr. Muravchik, for interrupting you. But do you think that the United States is, in fact, looking at a military confrontation with Iran?
It's always difficult to know. The option has been kept on the table, but that's always a part of any diplomatic offensive. And, of course, there are countervailing forces in the United States, including the cost and expense and perhaps backfiring of such an action. Intention is one thing. What you're able to carry out is another. And this will be an ongoing process in which it isn't simply the Bush administration which will be acting.
All right. As our first guest, Laura Rosen, pointed out, very difficult to know at this point exactly what the intentions are, but certainly the possibility of confrontation is there at almost any time. Phoebe Maher, again, author of The Modern History of Iraq, Joshua Marofchik at the American Enterprise Institute, his book, The Future of the United Nations, Trita Parsi with the National Iranian American Council, and Laura Rosen, senior correspondent, American Prospect, and freelance writer. Thank you all very much for being with us.